What I've been trying to do is think about how you would build a set of services and infrastructure online that would then make it easy for startups or whatnot to provide services in a privacy-preserving manner. Now, we have no idea how to do that. So what we said was we're going to build these point solutions, and hopefully after a couple of these point solutions, we'll be able to figure out common themes and common mechanisms that can then be abstracted away and provided as a broad service. Now, one of these point solutions is how do you do advertising? Advertising itself is a giant pie, and I think we bit off maybe a bit more than we could chew, but we'll see more about that in the talk. So this is joint work with folks at Max Planck. The other point solution that we are working on is how do you provide location-based services in a privacy-preserving manner. Now, I'm going to try to do some sort of an experiment here. I'm going to try to keep the main part of the talk short and leave a lot more time for discussion and questions and sort of turn this into a, you know, pick-your-own-adventure kind of talk. So why advertising? Advertising is not going to go away. It's been around for hundreds of years, and it's the dominant model on the internet. What's wrong with advertising? Well, everyone hates advertising. And the reason is, well, it really is annoying. The quality sucks half the time. I can probably count on one hand the number of people in this room who have clicked on an ad, right? And the reason is that, you know, they push it like spam. They push it obtrusively and in high quantities just to get that one click that's going to make them 5 cents. The second problem with advertising from a systems perspective is it makes things very, very slow. I recently heard a number that says 20% of websites actually experience a slowdown just because you have to contact all these third parties, fetch ads, fetch ad content, and if not done properly, your website rendering is actually delayed until you contact all these people, right? So can we do something better? Now, what happens today, just to get everyone on the same page, the ad ecosystem is incredibly complex. This is a reasonable enough simplification of it. You have publisher websites, think CNN, New York Times, that are going to show ads, and you have advertisers, you know, Nike, Puma, that have ads to show. And the way these parties all come together is through a broker of some sort. And the broker here can be Yahoo, Google, Bing, whatnot. Right, the broker goes ahead, crawls publisher web pages, figures out what they're talking about. It has the targeting information from advertisers. When a user goes to a publisher, the publisher serves up HTML content that has an ad box. The ad box literally says that, you know, insert an ad here, go to Google to fetch it. The browser contacts Google, and through the referrer header, it says, okay, I'm on this particular web page. Do you have any ads for me? The broker can then figure out which of the advertiser's ads match, does an auction, figures out which ads to send back to the user, and goes ahead and charges the advertiser. Money flows in that direction. Advertisers pay brokers. Brokers pay publishers. User doesn't make a cent, loses entire privacy. Right. The reason why this is even more stark now is that over last 10 years, brokers have figured out how to extract even more from the user. Right? Instead of looking at just the referrer, they add a cookie to every ad that they send out. Now, because it's the same broker that you access across a wide range of websites, now the cookie can be used to connect you and the referrer to which websites you have gone to in the past. So you have your entire browsing history now stored at the broker that the broker can then use to mine it, figure out what your long-term interests are, show you extremely targeted ads. Those turn to be very good for revenue purposes, very bad for privacy. So that's sort of the privacy problem that we said we are going to attack. We're going to say, well, we want targeted ads because that's how you make money. But then we don't want to have all our profile information in a cloud where we can't see it, we can't control it, we can't delete it. We have absolutely no oversight over, right? At the bottom of the slide, you know, I have sort of the extreme condition. You know, what's the worst that could happen? You know, some leak inside the broker, you know, is in league with a company that you actually care about, and you end up getting denied services. Now, it might seem far-fetched, but it has actually been in the past. There have been cases where insiders inside, say, Google, including Google, where they were able to circumvent their internal access control policies, access individual data on individuals, and then use it for nefarious means. Now, I'm not singling out Google just because, you know, I'm from the other one, but the point is that these companies are really big, and doing these fine-grained access control and or keeping oversight over your employees is actually a very hard problem when you have over 50,000 employees. So what did we set out to do? We said that, okay, we want to fix advertising, right? But we don't want to, I mean, ideally we would do a clean slate thing, but that's just not going to work, right? There's so much money that's been sunk into the publisher side of things, the advertiser side of things, that, you know, just incredibly hard to change. So we're going to go with a dirty slate solution that's going to support as much of today's advertising model as we can. So that's going to include the fact that we're not going to change websites that are showing ads. We're not going to change advertisers that are that are producing the ads. We're not even going to change the model. We're going to have the same auction model. We're going to have the same keyword-based targeting model. We're going to have the same billing models and the same click fraud models. Right? We'll try to keep as much of it same as possible and just change the minimal parts that we need to change. Second thing, being systems people, we said that, you know, we're not going to aim, initially at least, to provide guaranteed, provable, you know, 0% leakage privacy. And the reason is, if you want to go to that level of guarantees, then you will have to trade off some sort of scalability against that. And we said, well, let's see how well we can actually do, right, before we actually trade off scalability for privacy. Turns out we can do pretty well. We can scale really well and get good privacy. Now, what do I mean by privacy? Our definition of privacy is unlinkability. This is a well-known definition. For those of you who are thinking, why not differential privacy? I can answer that question later. What unlinkability says is that I'm not going to keep secret the fact that, you know, Alan here is actually a participant of the system. I'm not going to keep secret the fact that, you know, someone interested in Red Sox is in the system. What I'm going to keep secret is that Alan is the person who's interested in the Red Sox. Okay, so we are going to protect the link between users and attributes about those users that might be used for advertising. We're also going to protect the link between multiple attributes associated with the same user. Because if you could make that link, you could just connect enough of these together and then use external sources to de-anonymize Alan in this case, right? And once we have done that, right, we're going to see, you know, is this scalable enough? Is this performant enough? And then we're going to ask people, you know, is this private enough? Does it significantly increase the privacy that, say, you know, Google or Facebook today affords you? And hopefully the answer is going to be yes, and then we can make a case for actually doing something like this. The third thing we said was it should not be a trade-off. You should not be trading off privacy for poor quality advertising, because no one wants to make less money, right? Google, Facebook, they would simply reject anything that results in a decrease in their bottom line. So why do we think we can actually do that? Well, the point is, if we can provide you privacy guarantees, then you can access a lot more information about the user in a more privacy-preserving manner that allows you to do better targeting. So sort of to take an extreme case, right? Today, Google or Facebook will completely toss their hands when it comes to using, say, health data for advertising. But potentially, right, if you have diabetes or something, it would be very valuable for you to see, you know, nearby pharmacies and whatnot. And if we can guarantee you that the fact that you are the person who's linked with diabetes can be kept private and secret and does not leak, then we can now use that information and we can provide even better targeting than Google can today. And so we can make a positive contribution to their bottom line. And being a systems person, that's an obligatory fourth bullet there. Okay, so what sort of architecture did we end up at? We said that, okay, if you want privacy, the easiest way where you can have the best control over your data is your own computer, right? You trust it, it's managed by, you know, your IT department or your antivirus software, and at the end of the day, that's where you keep all your private documents anyway, right? So that's sort of your castle. We're going to keep all your data on your own castle. We're not going to let any of this data leak out of the system. So how do we use this data? We're going to have an end host agent that runs in a sandbox that can use this data and show you and profile you and show you ads. Okay, so that done, the question is, what data absolutely needs to leak, needs to leave your system? And there is some because you need it for billing and accounting purposes, right? So how do you get the data about which ads you saw or which ads you clicked over to the cloud? Well, there are a couple of ways of doing that. One way is to use, you know, zero knowledge, heavyweight, multi-party stuff. We said, you know, we're not going to go that route, at least initially, right? Second way of doing that is you put some sort of an anonymization network in the middle where, you know, Tor or whatnot. So you can get the billing data over to the cloud. The cloud can still do accounting. Remember, the money flows from the advertiser to the publisher. User doesn't see that money anyway, so anonymity is fine. But the problem with that is that if you have full anonymity with a Tor-like system, you cannot defend against a large class of click fraud attacks, right, where malicious individuals are clicking on ads, and then you sort of can't push that attack back back towards the user. So we came up with a third option, which we call a dealer. This is a single party that's different from the broker that is placed between the user and the broker. It's called a dealer because it actually plays for both sides. For the user, it provides an anonymization proxy-like behavior. Any message that the user sends to the broker is stripped of your IP address or any other identifying information, but the message itself is encrypted with the broker's key, right? So the dealer doesn't see any of it. All it does is it just provides anonymity for the user. For the broker, what it provides is that in case of attacks or click fraud attacks, the dealer can help push that attack down so that those clicks can be marked and not counted for the system. The broker is just as I set out, you know, it's sort of honest in that, you know, it's a big company, so it wants to be private. But then it might have these dishonest employees inside it that might be trying to circumvent all its policies. The only big assumption that we make here is that the broker and dealer don't collude. If they collude and if they sort of pool together all the information they have, then it's just like having one giant broker and all's lost. But as long as you have non-collusion between the broker and dealer, we can provide you privacy in terms of unlinkability. So given this setup, how does the whole advertising stack work? Many of you might have guessed what's going to happen. The agent is going to look at whatever you do on your computer, look at what websites you visit, look at what applications you open, you know, your Word documents, your Excel stuff, and it's going to build a user profile that's going to stay local to your computer. The advertisers are going to send their ads to the broker, and the broker is going to, the agent is essentially going to prefetch the ads that might be of interest to you. And I say might be because in order for privacy, it'll have to prefetch more ads than will be shown to you to preserve privacy so that no one can figure out exactly which ads went down what path. But it has to do that in a scalability manner, so there's a trade-off to be made there, and I can talk more to that if people have questions about that. So it's going to scalably download a superset of the ads that it's going to show to you. When the user goes to a publisher website, just like today, the website serves up an ad box, except now the ad box is going to be intercepted by the agent locally, and the ad is going to be served from the local cache of ads based, again, on the local profile information, which will perform absolutely the most fine-grained targeting that you can imagine, but everything's going to happen locally. And because you don't have network round trips and whatnot, it actually ends up being faster doing it this way. Next. When you view an ad, when you click on an ad, all that reporting information needs to be sent. The information is sent back to the broker, but it's encrypted and it's sent through the dealer for anonymity. And finally, if there's a concern about certain reports being fraud, the broker can identify it, and I can talk to what methods it has available just based on stuff it does today that it can use to identify these things. And it tells the dealer, saying, "Well, I have no idea what user sent me this message, but this is fishy." Right, and the dealer says, "Oh, I actually know which user sent you that message. I'm not going to tell you, but I'm going to give you assurance that I won't send you more messages from this user in the future." And the broker can actually verify that the dealer is doing its task correctly. So that's sort of the big picture of how things are set up. In terms of the protocols that happen internally, this is one of the protocols. This is how we do reporting, but they all have the same general flavor, and I can go more in depth if people have questions about the other parts. But basically what happens with reports is that the report is generated by this client agent running in a sandbox. We have a trusted reference monitor, that's sort of the sandbox API that we expose, that's going to encrypt the report with the broker's public key. It's going to send this report through the dealer all the way to the broker. Now, what the dealer is going to do is the dealer is going to strip away your IP address information and associate a report ID or a random ID. Now, key thing to note here is that the report ID for individual reports is random, and it's for each report it's different. So even if the same user sends two reports, the IDs are going to be different. Okay. So as a result, what's going to happen is that the dealer is going to learn that, you know, client X, this guy, clicked on some ad but doesn't know which ad it is because that content is encrypted. The broker, which gets that report, will learn that someone clicked on specifically ad Y because he can decrypt that content, but he has no idea who that someone is. He's going to have a report ID that he can then not link with other ads from other clicks from the same user. So we still have all the unlinkability properties we set out to preserve. In case of click fraud, the broker is going to say, "Okay, this report ID that you sent me seems fishy. the dealer, which is going to maintain a mapping from the original user to the report ID, can figure out, oh, this report ID maps back to this particular user. Now, let's say the broker flags, 10 report IDs, 10 random report IDs, is malicious. They all go to the dealer, and dealer realizes that all 10 of them came from the same user, right? And so it can say, okay, now you're above threshold. I'm going to stop accepting any more reports from you. But the broker doesn't learn who that user is. The dealer is able to, and the dealer doesn't learn which ads that user clicked on, right? So we still have unlinkability, and we can still push back these sort of attacks. Now, at this point, I'm going to turn this into a pick-your-own-adventure talk, right? I can delve much deeper into each of these issues that I have here in bullet points. If you have any specific interest, I'd encourage you to head to the mic and take the driving seat. But basically, I can talk about the scalability of the system. I can talk about the implementation we have, the prototype deployment we have. We actually managed to get 2,100 users to actually use the stuff that we have, and that was actually kind of cool. But at the end of the day, though, this entire thing is sort of an architecture. It's a design paper. And so I can go much deeper in the core protocols we have about how do you profile the users from the end host, how do you disseminate ads scalably, how do you do auctions that are identical to the auctions that happen today, again, without violating the privacy properties we set out to provide, how do you report clicks, detecting fraud, and stuff like that. So with that, I'm going to wait for questions, and I'll conclude in, like, the last minute of this talk.
Philip Marquardt, MIT Lincoln Labs. I'm wondering if we're making too strong of an assumption to say that the user profile information that's stored on the machine is safe, and is there a way to maybe protect that information if it were to be accessed?
So the question is whether you can protect the user's information that's sitting on the user's computer, is that right? So that's a problem that we obviously don't solve. The question is, today your credit card information is cached in your browser, is cached in n number of places on your computer, right? Do you trust your antivirus software, do you trust your operating system to actually do a good job of protecting that information? To the extent that you do, the exact same techniques would apply here, right? That you have your AV company that's providing the reference monitor that I talked about, that ensures that the agent cannot access, arbitrary files, willy-nilly, can't run native code, stuff like that, and use that to protect stuff. Now, if your question is, Google is far more secure just because they're not going to get infected by viruses and your laptop is, then if that's the concern that you have, then there's not much we can do about it, right? If you end up saying that the laptop that you have you can't protect, then that it might very well be true that Google provides better security in that specific scenario.
Hi, Alexander Kuzmanovich from Northwestern. I have two questions, actually. So the first one is that you said that you are completely compatible with the current advertising model. So in the current advertising model, you have something called cost per impression, right?
Yep.
How many times the ad shows?
Yep.
That's what the cost is based on. So here you support cost per click, which is one way, but how do you support CPI?
Right. So in the current advertising model, there are, in fact, three things. There's CPI, which is cost per impression. Every thousand times you view an ad, the advertiser pays something. There's CPC, which is cost per click. And then there's CPA, which is cost per action. So after you view an ad, you go to the website, you actually buy the thing, and that's when the advertiser pays. In fact, we support all three of those models. The way it works is that when you see the ad, again, using that report thing that I was talking about, it has an event type here in the report message, right? This event thing says whether you saw the ad, so that's going to be a view event, whether you click the ad, that's a click event, or if it's an action where the agent can actually track that you click the ad, 10 minutes later you went to this website and you actually bought it, the event type is going to be a buy event. Right? Each of these reports is going to go back using the exact same mechanism we have, and the accounting is going to be done exactly the same way on the broker side. You're going to charge for the number of views or charge for clicks or actions.
Okay. So basically the second question I have is, basically you said initially that just a second. I just forgot the question. So
let's move to another question.
Yes. I'll be back. It's an important
one. So I'm interested in that high level motivation. So the original proposal is that you can get more personalized advertising from letting people serve these on their local computers. This is kind of the bread and butter of these big brokers, and I'm curious to know kind of more concrete proposals about how exactly it's more personalized. And then also, is that going to be enough? I'm extremely skeptical that that would be enough for them to take the next step, which is to trust that the dealer, which is now a separate entity by definition and has to remain that, is going to stay up. And then now there's just like crucial dependency in their bread and butter pipeline.
Right, okay, so there are two questions. One is about profiling, the other one's about the deployment model. Let me go really quickly through the profiling stuff. Basically what we enable is you can do everything you do today, and you can do more, right? So we can still leverage the crawling stuff in the cloud. We can still use that information in a privacy-preserving manner. But what you can do more is that now you can profile users based on websites that they have to log into, right? Google cannot profile your Facebook page. Google cannot profile what messages your friends posted on Facebook. We can do that. We're running in your browser. We see everything that you see, right? So we can profile you based on exactly what you are seeing. We can actually do more. We can use social feedback, right? We're in a browser. We know who your friends are. We can talk to the agents on their computers and figure out, you know, what are things that you both might be interested in. Other stuff that we can use, again, because we provide more privacy, we can use, you know, camera, mic, GPS, acceleration, n number of things on your mobile device to find a very rich context about you and profile stuff based on that. So we strictly enable more context, more profiling than today. Now, have we demonstrated that we do better, have better return of investment? No. I mean, we have 2,000 users that are sort of telling us that, you know, the entire system, the stack works, but then it's not representative enough to do much of a profile experiment anyway, but that's something that we are on target to do in a few months. About the deployment story, it's hard, right? We're certainly not targeting people that don't click on ads or stuff. So that's not a concern about getting the stuff onto the user's computer. We have a fair number of ways of actually doing that. The hard part is what you were talking about, which is step three here. How do you compel the current brokers to actually do it? It's very hard to compel, you know, the market leader to actually, you know, completely change their model and go a different way. But it's conceivable that you can convince the market leader number two to actually provide privacy as a differentiator. Right? You can say that, you know, we are far more private than these other guys. That's why you should use us. So that's one way. The other way is if you can have a startup sort of model. If you can demonstrate better return on investment, you can have a startup and, you know, get it bought out by Google and Microsoft if you can demonstrate that you're actually saving them money, you're reducing their risk, and you are hedging against potential regulation. So recently, FTC came out with this do not track list that says, yo, we don't like all this cookie stuff that's happening. Once they realize what's happening on mobile phones and more widely with all these things, they're going to say, oh, this is freaky stuff, right? If regulation ever comes to pass, that would be another compelling reason that makes the current brokers sort of change their model. So there are a whole bunch of ways how you can compel them. Exactly which one will actually come to pass and make sense, we don't know yet. But it's possible that some of these can actually happen.
Thank you.
I remembered my question. So my question is that you said yourself that people generally don't like advertising. So what stops them from just, aren't you giving a tool to users to simply say, I don't want to have any advertisement?
Yeah. So we are not targeting people who install Adblock, right? These are the people who don't click on ads, who don't make Google money, who Google doesn't want to send ads anyway because it's just costing Google money to show them ads. We're not targeting them. Now, I guess your question is, you know, isn't everyone using Adblock? Surprisingly, the answer is no. So we did this measurement study of users that use Codeine. So these are already technically sophisticated users. What we found out was roughly 12% worldwide average are what install ad blocks. Okay, 21%, almost double that, will install anything you throw at them. They will install toolbars that provide you absolutely no use, right? So it's those 88% of users that we are targeting. If you don't want to see ads, that's great, and exactly how companies manage to provide you free services, whether it's subsidized by the people who see ads, we don't know. But the point here is that a large fraction of people actually do see ads or are not motivated enough to turn them off, and those are sort of the you know, drive-by ads that we're targeting.
Thank you.
Mike, I'm Abhigyan from UMass Amherst. You talked about this in a bit in answering the last question. I want to know, how does the dealer make money? Who pays the dealer money?
Right. So again, the dealer's economic model, there are multiple ways of, oh wait, there was another question earlier about the dealer model. So the dealer model, we have several models there. It can be a separate party, it can be run by the EFF, it can have some funding that the EFF may provide to a third party. But interestingly, we've been talking to folks in the EU regulatory regime, and they are fine with having the same party, say Google or Microsoft, implement both sides, both the broker and the dealer, as long as they get to verify the interface in the middle and ensure that all the stuff in the dealer is not leaking out, is not being accessed by anything in the broker, right? So they'll have third-party verifiers go in and do the code. So the concern that someone had was that, you know, what about this dependency that you have on this third party who may not be in a position to provide an internet-scale service? Well, that doesn't necessarily need to be the case. It could essentially be the two parts of Microsoft that are legally bound to not collude, and that's a model that's in place in Europe. And can do that. So in that particular case, obviously the cost thing is already handled. But even for a third party dealer, we went ahead and we did some back of the envelope calculations. We used about a Bing advertising trace of 2 million users over 2 weeks. We did all the stuff in the protocol with them, and we ended up with, the bottom line here is we ended up with 1 cent per user per year in terms of dealer costs, including both network and CPU. And that's because roughly for each client, we end up spending 120 kilobytes a day. And that's easy. Then this is with the current EC2 pricing model. So, you know, 1 cent you can recover through any number of means. Even the dealer could, you know, get money from advertising. It could, you know, ask the user n number of ways of recovering that 1 cent.
I wanted to just ask a quick question, Wolf Richter from CMU. So let's say I decide to install the massive Microsoft Bing spyware package. One of the big things for me, and I feel like for users in general with this stuff, is to actually know exactly where or what's happening with my data. So I know you're telling me that the spyware tool is not going to leak it or give it to other people, but I feel like, have you guys looked at usability or like how to show a user or prove to me that the data is not leaving my computer beyond, like, I mean, I can look at my firewall. Obviously, it's going to be connecting to some dealers and stuff, but I don't know where is my data going? How are you going to show me or prove to me that it's not leaving my computer? And you also said it could contact other agents and other computers, maybe.
The weasel words out of the question, not spyware. Not all adware is badware, but okay. I agree that things that people have done in the past has been spyware and badware. Essentially, what we have for the client is we have a reference monitor that can exactly track what you are doing and what you want to do. Now, there are research papers out there, if you look at Taindroid and whatnot, that can say, you know, this is the information that was accessed, this is the information that leaked out of the network. Even in a black box manner, it can track all those trains through the computer, and that's essentially the model that we want. We want a reference monitor that sandboxes the agent that's running on your browser and gives you complete and full knowledge about exactly every piece of information that thing touched. The second thing is, all that stuff is like the details about what the reference monitor does. The second thing is that we are not providing the reference monitor. We have a set of hooks and APIs, but the reference monitor is provided by your antivirus software, right? Okay. If you trust your AV software to do a good job of it, then you're in good hands.
I see.
Jeff Green, I'm just wondering, have you looked at the ability to de-anonymize the information that comes back? Because you build much more complete profiles and you serve a superset of ads, but there's going to be a core of relevant ads there. Is there any ability over time to de-anonymize?
So I'll get to the root of your question. The reason I'm guessing you want to de-anonymize it is to do all these sort of analytics. Try to build aggregate information, try to help the advertiser target the campaigns better and stuff. So have we looked at analytics? The answer is yes, to an extent. We are currently looking more at it. The point here is none of this data is actually being lost. Like, we are logging everything, except that the logs are just not available at the broker, right? They're sort of distributed in the system. There's some stuff that's sitting at the user, there's some stuff that's sitting at the broker. So the real question is, how do you do analytics in a way that still preserves privacy? And that's something that we are currently working on. But to give you a very straw man sort of solution, right, you take your analytics query that says, you know, of everyone who clicked on my ad, what's the top website that they went to? You can't run that query locally at the broker, but you can push out that query into the network of all the agents that are running there. The agents run the query locally and send the information back. In the path, in the middle, it gets aggregated and your privacy gets preserved. And there, actually, the differential privacy model is applicable, and we can provide that. So we can still do analytics without having to take all that information back to the broker by simply just sending out these analytics queries down into the agent.
Thank you.
Okay. So to really quickly summarize the whole thing, we have a full set of protocols, and there's a lot of potential to actually evolve many of these things, the auction part, the click fraud part. The core message from this talk is that privacy and scalable systems, even something as large a chunk as advertising, are not mutually exclusive. And for researchers, the core message here is that actually it's a very fun field to work in. So if you're interested, you know, you should absolutely talk to us. You should absolutely start looking at this. But I mean, there are very few people actually looking at this area. Industry doesn't have a solution to it. And there are lots and lots of low-hanging fruit, right? Anything that you can think of, you can probably write a paper in very short order. So great. Let's build privacy for the internet. I don't know. Yep, that's all I have. Thank you.